Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If you will, open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We'll begin reading in verse 3. As Wayne mentioned in his prayer, I have found this sinus allergy stuff. I appreciate those in my Bible class for allowing me to end that a little bit early so I could prepare myself for this time. This worship that we're giving to God is the most important thing that we're going to do today. And so I appreciate you for allowing me to end that early so I can prepare for that. I hope I will get through this. I have a cup of water back here. I will warn you, it is an Alabama cup of water. Although I almost put a Kentucky one up here because Kentucky almost won yesterday and did me a lot of good. So I would have appreciated that. But anyways, it's just so good to see everybody here. We have a lot of those who are our guests today, and we want you to know that we really appreciate you being here. We hope that you'll come back any and every opportunity that you get the chance. We're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 3. Just one verse as we introduce our lesson this morning. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 3. The writer of Ecclesiastes asks a very important question here that I want us to consider today. He says, "What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun?" Have you ever thought about that question? You know, one of the things that I have found in my own Bible study is that I do not spend a lot of time in the book of Ecclesiastes. I don't know about you, but I just haven't spent as much time in the book of Ecclesiastes as I need to. I have preached on Ecclesiastes at funerals in regards to Ecclesiastes 7 and then the idea that it's better to go into a house of mourning than a house of feasting. I've talked to young people about remembering their Creator in the days of their youth, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and I've reminded us all and myself that we need to fear God and keep His commandments, because really that's what we're here to do on this earth. But really and truthfully, I think as a whole we do not spend as much time in the book of Ecclesiastes as we ought to. And let me just say this, that's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate for two reasons. Number one, Ecclesiastes is a book in the Bible that is inspired by God. And therefore, it is worthy of our time and worthy of our study. But second of all, let me just say this. I think that the book of Ecclesiastes is especially applicable in our day and time, in our generation here in America today. And sometimes we miss the message of Ecclesiastes because we do not spend a lot of time in the book. And so we're going to correct that this morning. We're going to spend all morning in the book of Ecclesiastes. If you notice, I normally put key verses on the back of the bulletin with the sermon, and there are no other key verses. I want you just to write down the verses that we're going to use, and we're not going to talk about very many of them today, because the message in Ecclesiastes 1 and chapter 2 is so vitally important that we're just going to park here and make sure that we understand it completely. That's something that's very, very important. You know, the book of Ecclesiastes is a story about a man who is on a mission. He is on a quest. He is seeking something. He is looking for a reward or a prize, and he is looking for it, and he just can't seem to find it. In fact, sometimes he thinks he gets there. He says to himself, "All right, I'm here, I've found it, I've got it, I see this reward," only to see it just slip through his fingers because really and truthfully, he didn't have it. But let me just say this, because this is important. He is going to find it by the end of this book. And that is important for one major reason. It is important because this reward that he is looking for is the same reward that you and I are after. It is every man's prize. It is what we are all seeking and searching for. And that is why this book is relevant and applicable to not just our generation, but every generation of mankind. This man is seeking significance in his life. He is searching for true meaning. He is searching for what really matters in life. He is searching for those things that really hold value in life. And I want to say this, he is not interested in some trivial pursuit. He is interested in answering the most profound questions in life. Look at verse 3 again. Notice this question. Let's consider this morning. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? Let me ask you a question. You spend your whole life working. You spend your whole life laboring. What do you have to show for it? You spend your whole life working. You spend your whole life laboring. You spend your whole life getting up at some time in the morning and going to work and leaving that place at some time in the afternoon. You spend most of your time laboring and working in this life. Let me ask you, what do you have to show for it? When you get to the end, what will you have done in this life that really matters? And there is a deeper question that we must ask to answer that question. I think that the writer here, is wanting to know, what is the purpose for my existence on this earth? What am I here to do? What value do I add? What is the significance for me being alive on this earth today? Have you ever wondered that? Have you ever said, God, what in the world am I doing here? Have you ever asked God that? What do you want from me? What is my purpose here? You see, this writer here, he is on a quest. He is on a mission. He is trying to find something. He is searching for significance. He says that I spend my life here on earth working hard, and I want to know that when I get to the end, that I want to have done something with my life that really does matter. He is looking for meaning in life. Let me just add something here as we look for meaning in our lives and as we're on this journey together today through Ecclesiastes. I want us all to recognize that this writer of Ecclesiastes has a great way of always asking the right questions. And I think that is important because some people today never do. Some people today want to know what their purpose is in life. They want to find true meaning in life. And what they do is they do all of this stuff to try to find this purpose, but they never just pause, they never just stop, and they never just ask themselves the question, does all of this stuff really matter? I think that I've mentioned today, or this year, or since I've been here, that I'm the biggest football fan in America. Have I mentioned that before? And not to mention, I'm an Alabama fan, which makes things 10 times worse. That's just the way it goes. You're one of those, aren't you, preacher? Yes, I am. I get that. You know, I was looking at a statistic the other day, and it said that last year, that 216 million people tuned in to watch college football. 216 million. 126 million tuned in to watch a bowl game. And so, yesterday afternoon, I spent my afternoon doing what I do this time of the year. I spent my time yelling at the TV screen, watching football. I get to the Alabama-Tennessee game. Alabama won, everything's good, life is happy today. And I get to about halftime. And I think about that statistic, and I say to myself, this is sad. Because there are over 100,000 people in a stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee, watching a football game that in 2 years nobody will ever even remember. And it occurs to me that I would love to preach to over 100,000 people in a 4-month period of time. But the reality is that nobody's going to fly in their corporate jet to come hear me. They'll fly to Knoxville and to Lexington and to Tuscaloosa, but they won't fly to hear me preach the gospel because you know what? The gospel's not important to them. You see, there are a lot of people doing stuff that doesn't really matter, ladies and gentlemen. There are a lot of people in this life today who are not asking the right questions. And that's what I love about this writer of Ecclesiastes. He is always asking the right questions. Listen to me this morning. If you don't hear anything else, please hear this. The search for significance in your life begins with people who truly want to ask the right questions and who truly want the answer to the right questions. That's where our search begins. And here in Ecclesiastes, the writer is determined to ask and answer this question. Look at verse 13 of chapter 1 with me. Notice what he says. He says, "And I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with." With wisdom as his guide. This writer of Ecclesiastes is on a search. He's seeking significance. What is it that makes my life meaningful? What is it that makes my life worth something? Now, before we go any further, we need to ask ourselves the question, who is this writer? Who is it that is on this journey to find the meaning of life, the meaning of significance in life? Well, in chapter 1 and verse 1, look there. It says he is the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Look at verse 12 there of chapter 1. He is the king over Israel in Jerusalem. Look at verse 16 of chapter 1. We are told that he increased in wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before him. And then we go to chapter 12 and verse 9, and we are told that he searched out and arranged many proverbs. Now think about it. King of Israel, son of David, reigned over Israel in Jerusalem, very wise. He wrote a lot of Proverbs. Who do we have? If you know your Bible history very well, you know that we have Solomon. Solomon is the author of this book. Solomon, the wisest man other than Jesus to ever walk on this earth, is the one who is going on this great journey. And I think that's interesting. I think that's interesting because he was a man who had the full capability to search for the meaning of true significance in life. I want you to think about this with me this morning, and I want you to think about all of the advantages that he had. He was extremely wealthy. For him, money was no issue. For him, he could afford to do whatever he wanted to do. He was not going to be held back by the circumstances that often hold us back from experiencing things in life. Nothing was going to get in his way. He was a king. No one was going to stand in his way of doing anything because of his power and because of his prestige. And he was a man of wisdom, of great wisdom at that. And that was a great advantage for him. You know, a lot of times we play the if only game. If only I had the money to do all of these things, or if only I had the resources, or if only I had the time. I know all of us want that, right? Then I would be happy in life. Then I would find true meaning in life. Solomon had no limits. He could try anything. He could try everything that he wanted to try. He could assess areas of life that are completely beyond our reach. So this morning what I want us to do as we go on this journey together is I want us to notice what Solomon did, and I want us to make application to our lives. The first thing, as we've already mentioned, is that Solomon sought significance. Solomon sought significance. And where did he look for it? You know, I think that it seems really odd that the wisest man who walked on the earth other than Jesus would look in the same places that you and I often look as we try to find something that proves to us that we have done something of significance in our lives. Where did he look? Or where do we look? Where do we look to try to find significance in this life? Well, some people look to wisdom and knowledge and intelligence for significance in life. A lot of people believe that if they are, and they really believe this, that if they could just be really smart, then they would find real significance in their life. Then their life would really matter. And so some people are convinced that the keys to wisdom are hidden, or the keys to wisdom are hidden in the wisdom of scholars. And so what I need to do is go to a great college, I need to get all of these degrees, I need to get my master's degree, my PhD, or I need to read all of the information that I can possibly read on the internet, because after all of that's true, right? I need to read all of that. I know some people, I talk to doctors all the time, they get sick and tired of people going on WebMD and trying to diagnose themselves of illness and sickness, because WebMD is just full of everything. You go in there for a cold, it'll tell you you've got some kind of major disease or something like that. It's just unbelievable. But we do that. We want to know everything we can know. We want information sometimes. We want wisdom and knowledge. And we think sometimes that if I could just be really smart, and if I could talk to smart people and intelligent people on their level, then that would make me significant in this life. Do you know anybody like that? Do you know anybody that thinks that way? That the quest for significance is found in how much stuff that I know? I want you to notice that Solomon tried that. I want you to look at chapter 1 and verse 16 with me. I want you to notice this. Solomon said, he says, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. Solomon is considered, as we've already said, to be the wisest man to have ever lived, of course, except for Jesus. And so the question is, did all of that wisdom and knowledge supply Solomon, the wisest man in the world, with the meaning of what it is that makes us significant in this life? We'll come back to that. Some people, they look for money. They look to money and wealth for significance in life. Now, this is where we really start speaking to our culture today, isn't it? This is really where we start speaking to American culture, to us in this generation. This is really where the rubber meets the road for us. This is really important to us. I really believe that a lot of people think that if I can just have a bunch of stuff, then my life will matter. Americans have fallen for that hook, line, and sinker. I want you to think about it. Who do we hold up as important in society? We look to those who are important in society as the ones who have the most stuff. Usually it is those who are extremely wealthy, who have the nice houses, go on the nice vacations, have all the money, they can do anything they want to do, they can live life, have the nicest clothes, they can go to the nicest restaurants, they can do whatever they want to do. So what do we spend the rest of our lives trying to do? Well, I need to get that promotion at work. I need to get ahead in my career, make something of myself, so why? Well, I just want to do well in my profession, right? Wrong. Who really wants to increase in their profession because they just want to do well in their profession? I don't know many people in that boat. Why do we want to get the promotion? Because they pay that guy who has that job more money. And if I have more money, I can afford to buy more stuff, nice cars, a great TV, all the Alabama football tickets that I can buy, right? If I have that, I know all of you would want to buy that if you had the money, right? I can afford nice vacations. And then my life is going to be so much happier and so much more meaningful. Ladies and gentlemen, if Solomon could be here today, he would tell you, don't be concerned with the promotion. And we need to remember that Solomon had unlimited resources. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and look at verse 4. I want you to see Solomon's search here. I want you to see Solomon's search. Meaning in life is not found in your promotion at work. He says, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. And I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men. Many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. Notice verse 10. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Solomon says, I had it all. There were no limits whatsoever. I accumulated for myself everything that a man in that time could possibly have. Here's my question for you today and for us to consider. Did he find significance with all of that stuff? Did he find purpose and meaning with all of that stuff? Did this stuff make his life matter? Was this the answer? Well, we'll come back to that. You know, finally on this point, some people, they are not so into wealth or wisdom, but buddy, they really want power, don't they? They really want power and influence. And we are told to be good influences. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having money or having wisdom or having wealth. There's nothing wrong in and of itself with that either. But that's not where the meaning of life is. That's what we're saying. But some people, boy, they want power. Some people want fame. They want popularity. They want to be able to influence anybody at any time. If I could just be famous, if I could just be powerful and become somebody that everybody knows, then I would be significant, right? Well, Solomon tried that too. Look at Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 9. The Bible says, and we've already read it, we'll read it again, "Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem." In fact, we are still talking about Solomon today, aren't we? Because he was a popular guy. He was famous. He was powerful. Did it make his life matter? Is that what defined him? Is that what made him significant? Remember that Solomon is seeking significance. He was looking for his purpose in life. He was looking for what really matters in life. So what made Solomon truly significant in this life? Well, the second thing I want us to consider today is that Solomon learned a thing or two. Solomon learned a few lessons. He learned a thing or two. What did he find on this search? He explored wisdom and wealth and power and popularity. What did Solomon find in search of this great prize? Notice chapter 2 in verse 11. And let me just say this. I want you to notice that Solomon's summary here is absolutely brutal if you think about it. It is absolutely brutal. Look at chapter 2 and verse 11. He says, "Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity, and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun." Solomon said that, "I have looked back on all of these things that I have done, and it was all absolutely meaningless and pointless. There was no real significance in any of that stuff." Look at chapter 1 and verse 13 and verse 14. He says, "And I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with." Notice verse 14. "I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind." Solomon says, "You go after all of this stuff, the wisdom, the wealth, the power. I've done that. I have pursued everything possible. I had it all. And I got there, and it was nothing more than vain and useless and meaningless." Let me ask you, why do you think that it is that Solomon came to that conclusion? That seems like a pretty grim conclusion, doesn't it? It seems pretty downbeat. It just sounds pretty morbid, I guess, if you think about it. Wow, you must be a pessimist, Solomon. That's what you read when you read chapters 1 and 2. Was Solomon a pessimist? No. He says that it is, and it's going to get worse, let me just say this. But he says that it is all vanity because guess what? We are all going to die. He says that all of that stuff is vain because we are all going to die. Notice chapter 2 and verse 12. Notice chapter 2 and verse 12 and what he says. He says, "So I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly, for what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both." I want you to stop there for just a second. Solomon is saying that it is better to be wise than to be foolish. He's saying that. He says the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. But notice what he says at the end of verse 14. "But regardless of that, one fate befalls them both." Look at verse 15. "Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike will die." me tell you, it does not matter how smart we are. It does not matter how much knowledge that we have or how intelligent we are. It does not matter how big our bank account is. It does not matter how much that you have saved for retirement or how nice your vacation was this summer. It does not matter how big your house is. You are going to die. You cannot buy your way out of death. Eventually it is going to get you and you will die. And that's what Solomon teaches us. It doesn't matter what I have done with my life, the fool and the wise man both die. And that's not all. This is kind of a grim picture if you think about it, but that's not all. Notice what else he says. He says that not only are we going to die, but he says that we're going to leave everything behind too. We're going to leave everything behind when we die. We can't take it with us. Have you ever seen a U-Haul following behind a hearse? I guess if it did, it wouldn't matter very much. I think some people would probably have liked that, I guess. Their U-Haul to be buried with them with all their stuff. It really wouldn't matter. Notice chapter 2 and verse 18. Chapter 2 and verse 18. Notice what Solomon says. He says, "Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me." Boy, that stinks, doesn't it? That really stinks. My dad told me one day, he said, "Son," he said, "I want my last check to bounce." I thought that was pretty good. He didn't want me to get a thing. I appreciated that. That's frustrating. All of the stuff that you have accumulated is going to be left to someone who comes after you. Did you know that at the moment that you stop breathing, legally speaking, all of your stuff becomes somebody else's property? It is no longer yours. But it gets worse. Look at verse 19. "And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity." Solomon says that what makes this worse is that I'm going to have to leave this stuff behind to someone who didn't work for it, to someone who didn't labor for it, to someone who showed no wisdom whatsoever with it or in getting it, and all he had to do to get it was be born my child. And he could waste it away. He could do whatever he wants to with it. He could squander it. Do you think that Solomon saw the writing on the wall? Do you remember who Solomon's next son was going to be? Who was going to be king over Israel? Do you remember that? Rehoboam, who basically squandered everything and made a lot of bad decisions. How many times have you seen that happen? Some wealthy man leaves a fortune to his children who fight over it, spend most of their time on legal fees, and then they squander the rest of it. Solomon said in verse 19, "This too is vanity." Then after we die, and we leave all our stuff behind, I want you to notice the grimmest of all of these things. The worst part of it all is this. We will be completely forgotten. Did you notice that Solomon said that? That we will be completely forgotten. And Solomon may be the exception to that rule, but we have his because we have his life recorded for us in the Bible. But most of us today who are sitting here right now, most of us, when we die in a few years, we will be completely forgotten about. Nobody will ever remember us. Look at chapter 2 and verse 16 again. Notice what Solomon says. "For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten." Have you ever thought about that? You can spend your life trying to be really smart, trying to be really rich, trying to be really famous and popular, and guess what's going to happen to you? You are going to die. You're going to leave your stuff to somebody else. And guess what else? No one will remember you that you ever lived. I want you to think about this in regards to your own family. If I think about it in regards to my own family, I know my grandfather, who is still living in Warren Robins, Georgia today, still preaching today, I think 88 years old. I knew my grandmother, that's on my mom's side. I knew my grandmother on my dad's side pretty well. I did not know my grandfather on my dad's side. He passed away before I ever lived. I knew my great-grandmother on my mom's side. I vaguely remember my great-grandfather on my mom's side. But folks, after that, I don't know anybody's names. I don't know anything about anybody else. And you look at me and you say, Wiley, you need to do a little research. Why? So I can know the names? Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing wrong with doing research about these things. But what we need to understand is it is only a matter of years before nobody is going to know that you and I ever even existed. Have you realized that? Nobody is ever going to even remember that you and I ever existed. They're not going to know we existed. Someone says, wow, what a depressing view of life. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not depressing. That is not morbid. That is not pessimistic. That is life. If you know, that's my favorite saying. Some of you who know me the best know, well, that's life. Somebody asked me in the bathroom a few minutes ago. They said, man, I'm sorry you're sick. I was Randy Runner. I said, well, that's life. You know, it just happens. He just kind of laughed and he's smiling now. What Solomon is trying to get us to see is that if we are devoting our whole lives in pursuit of stuff or wealth or wisdom or power or fame, you are wasting your time. That is a path to disappointment that leads to absolutely nowhere good. Life will be miserable if you do that. And it leaves us wondering the question, is there no reward at the end? Are we all just left to live out this pointless and miserable existence and then just die? And that leads us to our final point, because we clearly see that Solomon found the answer. We see that Solomon found the answer. What is the answer? Now the good news is at the beginning of this sermon I told you that Solomon, although all of this is going to seem morbid and pessimistic, Solomon is going to get to the end and he is going to find this answer. And he is going to tell us what this answer is. He uncovers this reward. And when we get to the end of the book, the last two verses in Ecclesiastes 12, in verse 13 and verse 14, Solomon is going to tell us exactly what matters in this life and how we can be successful. Significant in this life. You can quote it, can't you? You've heard it so many times. Don't quote it. Turn there. Let's look at it. Don't let familiarity breed contempt. Don't grow complacent. Let's read there and let's see it with our own eyes, because it is extremely, extremely important. Solomon says this at the end of his life. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. You know what that tells me? It tells me Alabama football is not important. I'm still a fan. That's what it tells me. Richard Peterson loves hearing me say that, by the way. I know he does. It tells me that there is something important in life. It tells me that if I want to have any real significance at all, and if you want to have significance in your life, and if you want to be your life to be meaningful, here it is. Fear God and keep His commandments. In other words, I have to have the most awesome and profound reverence and respect for God that I would take His word and I would do exactly what it says. And if you do that, there will be at least two good things that will happen in your life. Number one, first of all, you will be living your life in such a way that life really does matter. That life really does matter. Those who truly fear God and keep His commandments are busy with one thing: helping other people get to heaven. That's what matters in life. Let me say that again, because I don't want you to miss this. What really matters in this life is whether or not you have helped someone get to heaven. Have you? What's that song that we used to sing? I don't even know if it's in this book. I think it is. You've never mentioned Him to me. Ladies and gentlemen, that's words you never want to hear. Those are words you never want to hear. You never talked about Jesus to me. You never told me that what I was doing was wrong. You never told me that there was a better way, that my way wasn't the best, that there was a better way out there, that it came from God, the God of heaven who's judging me. You never told me that the most significant thing that you or I can either do, ladies and gentlemen, is to help people get to heaven. That's what we're here to do. What a wonderful task. I've often said that if I could be an angel, you know what the job I would want is? I would want to be that angel that accompanies the soul from death to heaven or to paradise. I'd love to have that job, you know? To see the reaction of the person when they get to heaven, when they get to paradise. Wouldn't that be a cool job to have? Ladies and gentlemen, you can. You don't have to be an angel to do that. You can do it now. You can help people get to heaven. You can spend your life making it really matter. Nothing else has any lasting value. Number one, you can help people get to heaven. That's what matters. And number two, if I will spend my life doing that, then I am preparing myself for the eternity that is beyond this little microsecond of my existence here on earth. And then I get to die. And then I get to go to heaven. Isn't that what it's all about? Do you want to do something in your life that really matters? Do you want to do something that will bring significance to your existence, that will echo in eternity? Fear God, ladies and gentlemen, and keep His commandments. Why? For this is the conclusion of the matter, Solomon says. He says this is where meaning is. He says this is the conclusion. He says because this applies to every person. Why? Because God is going to bring us all into judgment. You will stand before the judgment seat of the Almighty God. And so will I. And we will give an account to Him for all that we have done. The question that remains is, will He say, "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joys of your master"? I hope that He says that about me. And I hope that He says that about you. Every single person here today. I want everybody to get to heaven. If you're here and you're not ready for heaven, then I would be very scared. Mark 16 and verse 16 says, "He that believeth and is baptized will be saved. He that believeth not will be condemned." And if you're not ready for heaven, you stand condemned today. If you reject that today, you are twice condemned. You are rejecting it again today. Don't do that. Leave here knowing that you're on track to enter into the joys of your master. If you're here and you are a child of God and you've fallen away and you've sinned and you've been searching for the meaning of life with wealth or with riches or with things or with wisdom or with anything else, and you've decided that life doesn't really matter, and now I realize what matters, and you need to make a correction in your life, whether it's private or public, make it today. If we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and as we sing.